Okay, let us begin. So, you know that only like 3% of the time I give you a title before I begin. So today the title will be The Midyan Conundrum. That's the title. So at least now you probably anticipate everything I'm going to say. So let's begin with the first source. It's Perek Lamed Aleph from the beginning. Vayidiber Hashem Moshe l'Emor, God spoke to Moshe, Nikom nikmat b'nei Yisrael me'eta midyanim achar te'esaf elamecha. So that's a really powerful, full verse. Extract revenge of the Jewish people against Midian, and afterwards you're going to die. Which of course then leads us to ponder, is the death of Moshe somehow connected to this? I know a lot of the commentaries will point towards this thing. Okay, maybe a different or less of a person would have dragged their feet and would have hesitated, and this would not have been their first mitzvah that they would do. You know, maybe there's all kinds of other things I need to do first, or even this, I need to do this exact, you know, right. But Moshe doesn't seem to hesitate, and we would like to believe then that Moshe does everything exactly the way that God had just now instructed. Now, part of the problem is going to be, do we understand the instructions? Part of the problem, and I don't want to ask, does Moshe understand the instructions? Because I don't even want to go there. But nonetheless, when the instructions are going to be followed out, we're going to find that Moshe is then going to question, hold it, what went on over here? So now where was the break? What went wrong? And the thing that went wrong, let's also try to be honest on this, because there really is a problem. Some of you won't understand that there's a problem, and that probably says more about you than about the problem. And that is that what then unfolds over the next chapter is really an extreme situation of, if you've won, I'll be very kind and call it bloodletting, and lots of blood is spilled. And at least on some level, that should disturb some of us. If it doesn't disturb you at all, that's fine. And I understand who you voted for, and all kinds of other things that I need to assume about you. But there is something here, nonetheless, which is disturbing. And as I said, let's at least note this. But part of what's going to happen is that Moshe is going to come back and say, hold it, you didn't go far enough. Like, you know, why did you keep some people alive? So over here, just in case we're troubled because the people who were killed, Moshe's troubled because the people who weren't killed. So then some of you then can say, see, you know, genocide essentially is something we're in favor of. So, and again, I hope that some of that does bother you, because there are rules for such things, which I'm not going to get into right now, otherwise we may not get out of it. Now, in the next pasuk, when Moshe now relays the information, I want you to pay attention. Vayidiber Moshe el ha'am. Now, the first thing, which is probably going to be the kind of thing that you will be least troubled about, at least as of this point, and that is the shift that took place, which is such a subtle, minor, probably unimportant, and that is that it said previously, B'nai Yisrael, Nekom Nekmat B'nai Yisrael, and now Moshe speaks to the Am, which means there really was room over here to say, V'deber Moshe El B'nai Yisrael. So am I correct in this, that this does not trouble you at all? This was not the kind of thing. You could have read those two verses 100 times, and I would have kept asking you, so show me something which bothers you. That is not the one that you would have picked up. So now, just in case you think I'm exaggerating, you're going to have to give me a little bit of time, and then we'll come back to that, because I think that that may be more important than I'm even letting on at this point. But the problem that you would have identified is what happens as we continue. Let's go find people who will go out to battle. Al Midyan, and they will then engage Midyan in battle, in order to get vengeance of God against Midyan. So the truth is that there's a couple of things that should bother you over here. One, as of this point, I've given you enough information that already you're shaking your head because you get the point. I don't have to ask you because I know that you get it. And that is that the shift went between Pasuk Bet, where it was Nikom Nikmat B'nai Israel, take vengeance for the Jewish people, or the people of Israel, children of Israel, while in the next verse, when Moshe relays information, is take revenge against Nikmat Hashem, take revenge for God. So therefore, you could make up some kind of a lovely Dvar Torah that these two are the same, and I'm fine with that. I have no problem with that, but I do have a problem that the words shifted over here. And therefore, ultimately, we can ask, so what was meant to be, and is there an issue over here? So again, just to be clear on that, God says take revenge for the Jewish people, and Moshe says take revenge for God, and there's another problem. The other problem is the one that you should have picked up as well, and I've given you so much time now already to identify it, and that is, why exactly are we only extracting revenge against Midian? Why are we not extracting revenge against Moab? And what is the relative responsibility of Moab versus Midian? Why does Moab get off free? And why is Midian then engaged in this horrific battle, in all of these people who are killed, and so on? And Moab just seems to move on to the next chapter. The amount of people who are sent, Elif Lemateh, is interesting. You end up with a total of 24,000, which is a meaningless number. 12,000, which is half of the 24,000 who were killed. So maybe there's some kind of connection, maybe not. To continue, we're told also that Moshe sends Pinchas ben Elazar, so that HaKohen, so that also should not surprise you all that much. He's already part of the narrative, right, in Pasuk Vav. V'yishlach otam Moshe elef lemate letzava, otam ve'ed Pinchas ben Elazar kohen letzava, uklei kodesh v'chatzot zrot ha'tura biyado, and he takes together with him some religious artifacts, which very much is teaching us that this is a religious battle. This is not just a military, political battle, which is taking place over here. There is a religious element to this. And that's also something which I think that we need to pay attention to as we go in. We're told of all the people that are killed, including Evi and Rekham and Tzur and Chur and Revan and so on, the five, probably Sheikh, you know, a Sheikh, Sheikh, the five Sheikhs of, there's a fellow who comes, and an Arab fellow who we're friendly with. He always calls me the Sheikh. The other ones call me Harav, but this one calls me Sheikh. Calls me up, Sheikh, how are you? So I guess he's directly translating. I don't know. I don't know what the benefits are of a Sheikh. Maybe I should trade out. Listen, when I go to America and speak in shuls, so in the Ashkenazi shuls, you're just a rabbi, but in the Sephardic shuls, you're a chacham. And that actually sounds like a value judgment, so that's far better. Other than that, they pay better also. So let's continue. I shouldn't say that. But who pays better? Actually, make me work harder. So let us continue. I saw somebody writing about this, right? Tzur, and he writes this is probably related to Cosby, but Tzur. I don't know why sometimes you have to write the word probably. I mean, I would say certainly, but okay, if you prefer this. And we're not going to go more as of this point into, you know, what exactly took place. I said what I was going to say about that. In source number 2, we find the Bechor Shor identifying one of the problems that we've noted, and that is, he says, Lekachbo el Midyanim velo amoavim, which means, again, the distance between these two and why one is going to be engaged in battle and the other one isn't. And incidentally, if any of this sounds familiar to you, I did speak about this last year, trying to find out the relationship between the two. That doesn't concern me this time, the interrelationship between the two. And if you're searching back in your notes, I didn't do it in this week's parasha. I did it in last week's parasha in Pinchas. And as I said, that's not what concerns me. But over here, the fact that Midian yes and Moab no. So he writes, Ki ha-Moavim adayin lo nitmalei sa'atam, v'lo ba'kitzam. Their time wasn't up yet. This is such an interesting comment. And I hate to say this because the Bechor Shor is a Rishon, one of the Balei HaTosfot. I don't even believe this is true in any way, shape, or form. So I will explain to you first what he says and why. And then a little bit more background in order to get some context to understand why I have some difficulty with it. So let me explain. What he's doing is he's echoing something that we saw all the way back by the Brit Bein Abtarim, right? What did it say over there? Is that God says to Avram, you know that your descendants will be enslaved for this and this time. Then the fourth generation or 400 years go up. And it says, because lo shalem avon ha-emori, that the sin of the emori is not up yet. Their time is not up yet. So then we know that there is this concept that at some point your time is up. So over here as well, he's saying, so first of all, note, his question is better than his answer. Question is, why are we engaging Midian in war and not Moab? And his answer is, well, it must be that Midian's time is up and Moab's time is up. Okay, that's a good distinction. As I said, the only thing which is true. The reason why I hesitate in terms of accepting this as I would say gospel truth, but that may have the wrong connotation for you. And that is as follows. One of the things that we've learned in the past is throughout Sefer Bereishit was to pay attention always to where people come from. What I mean by that is that we have the three sons of Noach, Shem, Ham, and Yafet. And what we find so much of Bereishit is actually the tension between the children of Ham and the children of Shade. Where Yafet fits into all of this is also interesting. They seem to be not all that involved. But now when we come to Sefer Bamidbar, the same thing should be in mind. And when you note, whenever God speaks to, it doesn't make a difference now if it's Avraham, Yitzchak, or Yaakov, or if it's Moshe, whenever he speaks about the land of Israel and says that you will be getting this land and so on, he always mentions the Canaanite nations. Chiti, Yevusi, Prizi, and so on. It's always the Canaanite nations. It's never descendants of Shem. Descendants of Shem have a right to be here. Descendants of Ham don't. So therefore, when we saw over the last number of weeks, there have been times that Am Yisrael come and engage somebody, you know, in conversation, in order, can we pass through? Whenever it's going to be somebody coming from the Shem line, we have no permission to attack them because they have a right to be here. I mean, I would actually go much further than this and say maybe even, and this is just to bother you because I know it's going to bother you, maybe even the promise to Avraham includes other people, which means Edom may have the right to be there because they're a descendant of Avraham. It's not just that they're from Shem. It could be that the promise to Avraham that your descendants will get all of this land, because part of the problem is the land promised to Avraham is very, very broad. It's very, very large. And Am Yisrael never get all of this land. But if other descendants of Avraham are included, so that becomes a bit more interesting. So therefore, when I look at Moab and I look at Midian and I look at Edom, all of these are people who ultimately come from the Shem line. They don't come from the Ham line, which means theoretically their time never would have been up. The only reason their time could be up is because they attacked Am Yisrael, which means that's the issue over here. And therefore, the Bechor Shor searching for an explanation, well, it must be their time is up and theirs isn't. I just don't think that that's necessarily true within the larger issue which is taking place over here. And that, again, is that whenever the B'nai Shem behave, then they're safe. And God says that. This is not, that is their land for inheritance. He says this again and again, that is their land, which is what leads me to think that maybe that's, if that's their inheritance, from who? Maybe from Avraham. Maybe when God promises Avraham this land, it's not just to us. And that's also something which is worthwhile contemplating. He continues and he says, Va'od, Shemosha Amad im Hamidyanim v'yitro nitchaber aleim v'lo nasu lehem panim. Which seems to be a counter-argument. It's essentially saying that Moshe lived there with Midian, which maybe is a reason not to be involved. And he says, well, this just goes to show you is that Moshe didn't play favorites. Okay, that doesn't explain why not Moab. That may explain why, yes, Midian, but that doesn't explain why not Moab. V'od ki Moab mida'aga asu ki hayu yireim. Mipnei shahoyu choshvim Yisrael ki artzam eretz refaim. V'shema yavo aleihem, which, by the way, is also a mistake based upon what is actually was promised to Moshe regarding Eretz Yisrael. But what he's saying is there is a difference over here, and this is also a often repeated statement. I'm also not completely convinced it's true, and I'll explain to you why. That there's a difference between Moab and Midian, and this is when you have to open up your map and take a look where they are. Essentially, Midian was not in the path that Am Yisrael was going. Moab was. So therefore, Am Yisrael is going to be approaching Moab. Moab gets afraid. But even approaching was not to conquer. Approaching was ordered to go through. Midian was no place near there, so therefore, if Midian's not involved in all, so why exactly are you getting involved in all of this? I mean, this is not your battle. There's nothing for you to be afraid of. And that's really what he's saying, is that Moab sees what they're doing as a preemptive defensive strike, that made sense, a preemptive defensive strike. Of course, they're afraid that Am Yisrael is going to capture them, like they have previously captured other places. But again, I'm going to make the distinction. The places they've captured have been places which have been owned by descendants of Ham. The complication is what happens when descendants of Ham captured things which used to be owned by descendants of Shem. So now, at that point, it becomes a little bit more complicated. Now, the reason why I hesitate to this, and we'll see as we move on, where exactly Midian lived and what kind of people the Midianites were, may change this a little bit. So I don't want to keep this in suspense. It's very likely that Midian were actually nomadic, and therefore, at least some of them traveled great distances. And as the Bedouin today, traveling from place to place to place, they among themselves can see any place that they happen to walk over or use for their animals. They can try to claim some kind of ownership of it, but essentially the ownership is one which is fungible and keeps moving from time to time, from place to place. So therefore, even though he's stating, well, Midian had nothing to worry about, unless they are exactly what I'm saying is they're nomadic, and therefore a new player in town going to capture some land over here could affect them. But nonetheless, as I said, I'm less interested in the answers, which I find difficult, as much as I'm interested in the question, because the question is the one that we all should have asked ourselves. I hope you did ask yourself. It's one which is obvious, which means why is there really a great distinction between Midian and Moab in terms of this revenge, aside from what are our problems? Noting the distinction between Am versus Yisrael, noticing that there was the revenge of Midian and not Moab, noting the revenge of God versus the revenge of Am Yisrael. So now you, I think, are all caught up in what it is that should be troubling us. The Ramban kind of ignores most of the things that I just now said, and he kind of floats between. Look at source 3. Vayishlach ata Moshe elef lamateh lo shalach sham kol am hatzava ve'af al pi shehayu hamidyanim arav, even though there were lots and lots of people among the Midianites. I don't even understand what I'm reading. He kind of just sort of floated between Midian and Moab as if they were the same, and if you can make some sense of that, that would be absolutely wonderful. He does note, if we read a little bit further where it's bolded, V'itachen od shenemar, ki moshe nitzdavet tzrorot ha-midyanim, v'nakom nikmat b'nei Yisrael, v'shalach shemu'atim la'kot b'arei ha-prizi, v'kol eitz tov la'pil, v'kol ma'ayan mayim l'stom, v'kol chakat tavel l'chov b'avanim, k'minhag ha-shololim, v'lo tziva lehem, davar rak lehinakem, k'asher timtza yadam. V'ashem yitbarach, asher lo ha-milchamot ha-midyan ha-umalkehem, v'areim b'yadam. Which means, he's saying is that it could be that Moshe's perspective was that all that they needed to do was to cause a little bit of discomfort. Cut down some trees and block some water sources. And that's all that he was supposed to do. And he notes, ki Moshe nitzdavet tsror. So what does the word tsror mean? It means to create tsar, discomfort, pain. So therefore, that's all that Moshe had in mind. But God decided that he was going to give over the whole land to the people. And he goes up this path. By the way, I cannot understand what the Ramban is doing. And I say this specifically because it's the Ramban. And the Ramban doesn't miss anything. And the Ramban, it's remarkable that he says this. I'll show you why in a moment. But this is just absolutely remarkable that he could parse the verse the way that he does. He goes on to try to heal or to bridge a gap between what was done, what was commanded, what God commands to Moshe, what Moshe commands to Pinchas, and what Pinchas tells the people, what the people actually do. And I'm going to say this again, all of this is important, but what I'm really interested over here is the way he kind of just floats over the Midian-Moab distinction. He quotes it, but he just kind of ignores that it's an issue. And the other thing that he does is that he tries to downplay exactly what it was that Moshe had thought they were supposed to do. And part of this seems to be motivated by the distinction between the nekama of the Am versus Yisrael versus the nekama of God. But as I said, it's just remarkable to me that he's speaking about this issue and he kind of ignores all the things which, at least I thought, are important. So you can then say, well, then maybe I got it wrong as far as what's important. So we will see as we move on that there will be others who will note this. Source number 4, Datz Kainim, again, Bali Atosvot, Vishlach Otam Asher HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Mar Lemoshe Nekom Nekmat Ata Ba'atzmecha. V'hu Mishalech Acherim, Ela Ayidei Shenitkadel M'bidyan, Amar Einu Bidin She'evgod Bahem She'hem Asu Li Tavot Hana'a. This is kind of like, and this should remind you of, that Moshe doesn't necessarily hit the water because Moshe was saved from the water, that Moshe is not going to hit Midian because Moshe was saved in Midian. And again, so far, V'yesh Omrim, she'ein ze Midian shenit gadal Moshe, she'zu b'tzad Moav. He goes, well, maybe this is a different Midian. So yes, well, let me just read a little bit more. V'ad Akshav Hichorva. So he goes, well, maybe this Midian's a different Midian. And again, notice that he's almost touching what the issue is. And when I read things like this, then I go and I waste a half a day and I start looking up in maps and I try to figure out what he's talking about, and I can't, and I don't know what he's talking about. I do suspect what I said before, and that what's ultimately the issue here is that Midian is nomadic. And therefore, we will find them in different places because they go and traveling from place to place. And even consider for a moment that Moshe, when he becomes one of the quote-unquote Midianites, he himself is nomadic, traveling all the way to Sinai with his flock, which means it's not such a close thing, but perhaps that's not such a strange thing to happen when you have that kind of a lifestyle. Now, with everything prepared and everything in our minds clear, I hope, let's look at source number 5. And now some of the things that we've seen will come back at us, and we're going to actually get more problems. And this is already 2 weeks ago, then we'll get into last week, and let's read slowly. And I know that you know all of this, so just amuse me, and let's read this together. V'yeshev Yisrael b'shitim. So it starts off and it speaks about Israel. Who is Israel? We're not answering. V'yachel ha'am l'znot el benot Moav. So now, who is the Am as opposed to Israel? Now, you know, one of the things which is great, we always have our excuses. We can always, right, you've heard this from me before. It's wonderful to have the Erev Rav to always blame for all of your mistakes and problems. So if this were the Chet Egel and the Am gets involved, you say, ah, the Am is, the Am, those who are with, those who are hangers-on, that's not, right, that's not us. Yes? So like if your mother says, what happened to your room? You say, it was the Erev Rav, right? It wasn't me. I could not possibly have done this. Right? The other answer would have been, it's the second principle of thermodynamics. Things left on their own move towards entropy. But this may be right? Things go from order to disorder. So why are you fighting against the rules of physics? But over here, to blame the Erev Rav may be a much better solution. But just note that distinction. And then let's read again now. The Yesh of Yisrael b'shitim, Israel now settles. Settles is a sense of comfort. The Yesh of Yaakov. Right? Yaakov b'kesh l'shevet b'shalva. It's one of comfort. It's one of settling. It's almost as if Am Yisrael have no idea what took place in, you know, the last couple of chapters, in the rest of Parshat Balak. We have no idea what happened, no idea about the threat, no idea that there was like this genocide which is hanging upon them. And instead they are there and they settle. V'yachel ha'am l'znot el benot Moav. So notice over here that the starting point here is one of znot. Znot, I think, is very clear. We don't have to just explain more than that. But notice who they're doing the znot with is with the daughters of Moav. So the Am are sinning with Moav, znot. Okay? Am, znot, Moav. So just keep those words in mind. Vatikrena la'am. Again, the Am are then called upon, l'vzvchei Eloheim, to worship their gods. Of course, you all know, but I don't, who are their gods, plural, that they were asked to worship at this point. So these are polytheists, so polytheists have lots of gods, and they're called upon to worship their gods, which they comply. V'yochal ha'am v'yishtachavu l'Elohim. They eat and they pray down, which maybe the order is a little different over here, but these couple of verses should have reminded you very much of the Chet Egel. right? Elohech Yisrael, Kamu Am, right? Kamu Litzachlu V'shatu, Kamu Litzachek, which means all the elements seem to be the same elements over here. And once again, I'm going to say, and if we can blame the Erev Rav, then all the better. The Erev Rav sin, they eat and they drink and they engage in sexual outrage and idolatry, and all of that's done. But then Pasuk Gimel troubles me. V'yitzamed Yisrael l'bal pa'ar. Is that a new statement or is that a conclusion of the previous statement? Notice two things have shifted here. One is that they called Yisrael as opposed to the Am. And the other thing is instead of Eloheihem in the plural as generic, over here we're told specifically Pa'or. So, Lebal Pa'or. So over here, the introduction of Baal Pa'or over here, is that something which we should note and who's introduced this? It continues, V'char ha'af Hashem b'Yisrael, and God is mad at Israel. So therefore, the Am did all these things, and then Yisrael are involved in Baal Pa'or, and God is mad at Israel. V'yom Hashem Moshe, now for those of you who forget this part of the middle, God tells Moshe exactly what to do. Kach et kol rashei ha'am, get the leaders, v'hoka'otam la'Hashem neged Hashemesh, and kill them, you're going to judge them, and you're going to put them to death in front of the sun. We get to Baal and Pa'or, and is Baal and Pa'or, are they the same, are they different, are they connected, are they disconnected? But at least there is some sun god going on in there as well. I also wasted another half a day going into ancient religions. V'yashov charon af Hashem b'Yisrael, and that caused the anger to stop, because now there was a plan. What's the plan? To take the people out and to execute them. We don't know, incidentally, if this was ever executed. We don't know if they ever did this. We don't know what happens next. Rather, Vayom Moshe el Shoftei Yisrael higu ish anashev nitzdim lebaal pa'ar. Each person should kill their tribe, their people who are involved in Baal Pa'ar. And again, this does sound somewhat like what happens right after the Chet Ha'Egel, where Moshe then come mil Hashem elai and go and people are going to kill their people. V'nei ish me b'nei Yisrael. So notice now, it's not just b'nei Yisrael, but it's ish, somebody prominent among b'nei Yisrael. Ba v'yakarev el echav et ha-midyanit. So now we've switched from the Am and b'not Moav. Now it's ish from Yisrael, and now it's a midyanit. So therefore, Moav to Midyan has shifted. But when it came to b'not Moav, that was the plural. Ha'am liznot b'not Moav. So how many, excuse my terminology, how many hookups were there? I don't know the answer to that. I do know how many people are going to die afterwards. So, on the other hand, et ha-midyanit, the Midyanit. So it seems to be there is one ish mi b'nei Yisrael over here, and the Midyanit. Le'inei Moshe v'nei kol ha'adah b'nei Yisrael, v'heim b'bochim petach ha'omoed. That phrase, and they were crying in front, is not clear if crying means crying. But notice it's in front of the Ohel Moed. And that itself should be interesting. Now, this behavior of this individual who we then will learn is Zimri, and this individual who we will then learn, her name is Cosby, that this is not necessarily an innocent action motivated by lust. The fact that they're doing this in front of the Ohel Moed and in front of Moshe, le'nei Moshe u'le'nei kol anat b'nei Yisrael, is something which is an absolute outrage. And we need to, really to consider this much more. But notice what's missing here. At least it looks like it's missing. And that is, it says nothing about what they do in terms of Baal Pa'ar. Which means, consider the following. The Am sin with Benot Moav. The Am then start to worship various gods. Yisrael then worship Baal Pa'ar. God then gives the law. The law is that those who worship Baal Pa'ar should be killed. We don't necessarily know exactly what that worship includes or not. And then we're told that this individual who is not, meaning the difference over here, he's not necessarily the Am, he is Israel. He's not with one of the Benot Moav, he's with Ham Midyanit. He's not necessarily worshiping Pa'or, he is involved in some kind of relationship with this woman, although it would be quite inappropriate. I mean, somebody there should have said to them, go get a tent, and not the Ohel Moed. Which means that seems to be exactly what part of the problem is over here, and it's to this particular specific situation that Pinchas responds. Vayar Pinchas ben Elazar ben Aaron haKohen v'yikomito chedavikach romach biyado. Now again, realize all the worshippers of Baal Pa'or, they've already have been. We know the sentence for them. We just perhaps have to bring witnesses or whatever, but we're told that they're going to be killed. He now goes and he takes the sword. And that is what causes the plague to stop, which is really interesting because we're told before that God already had, as it were, had calmed down. That's once the instructions were given. As I said, I don't know if they were implemented, but over here, Pinchas seems to implement it, but of course, I don't know what to do. See, if Zimri were to hire a nice Jewish lawyer to defend him, what defense could he have put forward? Excuse me. God said to kill the people of Baal-Peor, I didn't do Baal-Peor. I just met this nice Midianite. And anyway, all the others were with the Moabites. I'm with the Midianite. So what's the problem over here? Now, I know that there's a problem, and I know that Pinchas knows there's a problem. The thing is, was he trying to somehow fall between the cracks and then claim that whatever it is that he was doing is not what God said you couldn't do, except all of us understand that that which he was doing is really quite outrageous. And at least from my perspective, you can argue with me, it's not less outrageous than what everybody else was doing. It's just that technically he may now be in this, I'll call it gray area if it makes you happier, but he may be in this other area where he's not quite guilty because he didn't quite do what the other ones have done, that they received the death sentence. And by the way, all of this comes down to what exactly is the worship of Pa'or, which means how do you worship Pa'or? And how does Pa'or fit into all of this? Now, why am I saying that that's what's important? So let's continue. Source number six is the continuation. V'shem ish Yisrael, and I'll say it again, Yisrael as opposed to the Am, and that's why before also Nikmat Yisrael versus the Am wasn't just something which was incidental. It seems to me is significant. So the person is Zimri ben Salu, Nasi Beit Av L'Shemoni. He's somebody who is quite significant, and he sounded significant. V'shem ha'isha mukam medinat Kozbi Batzor Rosh Umot Beit Av Midian Hu. So therefore, Tzor does sound like a leader as well, to later on call him a melech. He is a leader of a group within Midian, so that is interesting. It's also interesting that the king himself would send his daughter, or a leader would send his daughter in all of this. Pasuk Ted Zayin, this is why I questioned the Ramban before, Vaydeber Hashem Moshe Lemor, Tzror et Amidyanim. Remember he quoted that? Cause them pain. So he says, oh, maybe cause them pain means to uproot the tree, or maybe it means to stop the water, but what about the rest of the verse? Vihikitem otam, and strike them down. So why did the Ramban skip over that second part and say, well, maybe the whole instruction over here that Moshe received was only, you know, on a lower grade? No, you can't possibly say that. You can't divide between the first half and the second half of a verse and say that Moshe only heard the first part, he didn't hear the second part. Yes? All of us could be guilty of that, yes? All of us could be in a conversation, someone's talking to us, and we lose, right? Something else gets our attention, and we don't hear what was said. Yes, we can do that. Moshe did not do that. So therefore, that's why I said before, I have no idea what the Ramban's talking about, so that just adds to your problems for today. But it continues, and it says, Tzorod midim yikitim otam, kitzorim heim, which means you cause them pain, and this is midah keneged midah. I would go one step further, that they tried to commit genocide, which is why genocide may be permitted in this case. And I'll say it again, they tried to kill us even though there was no direct threat upon their lives, and therefore if they did it once, then they're probably just waiting to figure out how they can do it again. And therefore the threat of a people like this is an extreme threat, because even though if we let them just move on, okay, they didn't succeed in cursing us, but that doesn't mean that tomorrow they're not going to use Zyklon B, which means that people who are trying to commit genocide are people who should be taken seriously, which is the one thing that we've learned from history is when people say they want to kill us, then pay attention, because generally people say such things, of course they mean it. And God seems to over here to be making a value judgment. But that's what's fascinating, because it threw Dvar Pa'or in this. So essentially, why is Midian being killed? because Midian is guilty of Baal Peor. Now, when we read through that last section, I don't know if you figured that out, but where did Midian get involved in all of this? Which means it was Moab, it was the gods of Moab, and Israel's involved in Peor. And at the very end, we find this guy who's only described as being, you know, this Jew with the Midianit, and we had no idea, you know, that Midian responsible, but this is part of what we now need to figure out, because we don't question. God says this is the case, that they're guilty in terms of Dvar Pa'or. Va'al Dvar Kozbi Bat Nasi Midyana Chotama Mukabi Yama Magefa Al Dvar Pa'or. So therefore, somehow there is this connection with Baal Pa'or, or Dvar Pa'or it's called over here, and that's something which we need, again, to pay attention. A little bit later on, after the battle, in source number 7, so it says here Moshe goes out to the field and they left the women alive. Which means we have a new reading of what actually had taken place, where Midian is getting all the responsibility. Midian is responsible for Baal Peor. Midian is the ones who are guilty of some kinds of a mi'ilah over here. And that's why I said there's this conundrum going on in terms of Midian, because we kind of missed it. And, you know, when did all of this take place? So, Rashi actually may soften it a little bit. Bidvar Bil'am, in source 8, Rashi says that part of the advice that they get is Eloheihem shel Elu, that means our God, Sone Zimahu, that the advice that he had given was that the God of the Jews does not like illicit behavior, and that gave them this idea, oh, so therefore we need to do illicit behavior. There's a lot more to talk about in this, but we'll leave that for the moment. Source 9, the Chizkuni b'dvar Bilam l'msor ma'al sherei mitoch dvarav shil Bilam sh'amar lo yibit aven b'yakov l'mdu la'achtiyam, which really is the same thing as Rashi, but it's more generic, where Rashi was more specific, is that the ma'al, which is an interesting word, mi'ilah, the misuse of something, is that the prophecy that Bilam receives is that there is no iniquity in Israel, and from that they understood, ah, there's no iniquity, there's no sin. If we make them sin, then they will become susceptible, which means the cursings turn to blessings because they're sinless, but if we make them sinful, then they will be able... See, it's actually interesting. So what's the end game then? Is the end game now to be able to curse them afterwards? Or is it just, you know, for some of you, the only way you'll understand it is that's their kryptonite, right? This is in order to, right, they've been invincible, so now this is the way that we take away the invincibility. Now, what we're going to find is that there are a couple of sources who try... Sorry if I'm terrible today. Don't worry, I'm going to edit all of this out when I say things like this. Try. Is that there's some who try to solve some of the problems. One of them is going to be the Abar Benel. And look at source number 10. Hashela Rishona, Ba'amru Nekom Nikmat B'nei Yisrael Me'eta Midyanim, V'lo Ma Me'eta Moavim. Moavim. So therefore, our problem, why Midian, why Noah, Moav, at least you should be happy that somebody's asking the question. As I said, it was an obvious question, one that we had to ask. Moreover, didn't the Torah itself say that they sinned with the daughters of Moab, so why are we taking revenge against Midian? Again, face value, there was this sin taking place with Moab, who leads the Jews into Avodah Zarah. There's one woman who happens to have this relationship with one man. Why is that so bad? Although we all realize that she is ha-Midyanit, and she is somebody who is very prestigious, and therefore it may be worse, but nonetheless you realize that the question at least is being asked. And he says, "Vatatir Hashem milchama zot pam yikra'a katuv nikmat b'nei Yisrael, upam yikra nikmat Hashem." So now you should be absolutely delighted with the Abar Benel, because two of our problems he has identified. You know, what's the shift over here? And now he sets down for us, you know, a rule and an understanding, and he says as follows, V'yaze lefisha midyanim shtayim ra'ot asu. The Midyanim did two things which were wrong. Im b'notam liYisrael, ha'echat shahayu siba shemeitu miYisrael esrim v'arba elef ish, because of them 24,000 died. And the second is that they caused us to sin with Peor. Now the problem is as we read that live, we did not know that that was Midian. 24,000, right? Wasn't that because of all the girls who were for Moab? Wasn't the worship of Avodah Zarah because of Moab? Which means, how did you get Midian in here? Now, he's going to do some fancy footwork in order to solve the problem. And if you fall for this, then great, then you have a solution. Everything is good. If you don't fall for it, then we're going to have to try to work a little bit harder. And he says as follows, V'nei b'v'chinat ha-meitim b'magifa, regarding the people who died, that's called karakatuv nikmah b'nei Yisrael. That is the vengeance of the Jews for the 24,000 that died. Shidikmat ha'am, hiv u'b'v'chinat ha-avodat kochavim sha'avdu b'avodat ba'avoram kara nikmat Hashem. So he says that the distinction over here is not because Moshe shifted, it's because there's two issues taking place. One is God says to Moshe, take revenge, take vengeance against them for, right, the vengeance of the Jewish people for the 24,000 that died. Moshe says take vengeance for God because they caused the Jews to worship Avodah Zarah, so therefore they're both true. There's no confusion over here. Ki avru brito b'sivatam. Now that's still a problem. Why does he say the Midianim and not Hamoavim? Ki ima shebi'arti v'znu ha'am b'not Moav v'kama ra'ayot hiveti l'va'er shara hazot mi'midyan yatsa. He goes, I've brought a number of proofs that it really came from Midian. Now, it has to be from Midian. Why does it have to be from Midian? This is, by the way, this is completely circular logic. Why does it have to be from Midian? Because God says, take vengeance against Midian, so it has to be Midian. Even though when we read the verses, we didn't understand it at all. V'lo mimoav, v'shebalak ha'sheshema she'belam amar ki shalom ve'emet yeh b'yamav halach l'derko. Because part of the message of Bilam was to Balak is that there's going to be no struggle between you and Am Yisrael at this point. Which, by the way, I'm going to go back. That's completely true. There was no reason for Am Yisrael to be involved in Moav in any kind of battle. Goes back to our distinction between the B'nai Cham versus the B'nai Shem. There is no issue over here. You have nothing to worry about. Maybe the end of days there's something else, but don't worry about these people now. There's absolutely no worry whatsoever. So once Moav gets the message, everything's okay, then everything's fine. Of course, what happens next? And incidentally, realize the possibility, and I'm willing to say at this point even a probability, that Am Yisrael settles in this place. Moav now is very calm, and Moav says, okay, let's, you know, we can live in peace and harmony, which actually peace and harmony can mean that. How did you understand that Am Yisrael are guilty of znut with the girls from Moab? Did you understand that as part of a plan? And maybe you did because you've been told by too many people that there was a plan. But maybe the girls of Moab, there's no plan. Maybe the girls of Moab is just that they went to college and these are the same girls in college. They went to study together and then they had a cup of coffee and then they did one of the tests and they went to celebrate. They went to a bar, they had a couple of drinks and they ended up sleeping with one another. Sorry, I take all that back. None of that ever happens. No, my for what I just said. No, my point is that is there some kind of a plan over here, or is this is much more? And then once they hooked up together, oh, why don't you come over Thanksgiving and maybe for Christmas? And the Jewish guy is saying, okay, she's hot, why not? So I'm sorry for misbehaving today. Some of you who know me know that I'm not sorry at all, but at least I'm polite enough to say that I'm sorry. But again, what I'm trying to ask is that maybe there is no plan over here. On the other hand, to send down the princess is something which is a little different, which means that the Am is together with the girls is one thing, but Yisrael worshipping Pa'or is another thing. And are we reading one sin or are we reading multiple sins? Now, what he's going to take us, where he's going to go with us in all this, V'hine, Amam Eita Midyanim V'loma Eita Moavim, Ki Ima Shebi'arti V'znu Ha'am B'mnot Moav V'kama Rayota Hiveti L'va'er Sheharaa Hazot Mimidyan Yatsa V'lomi Moav. Okay, we read this, then we hear it, everything is fine. And he moved on. But as Bilam is traveling home, by the way, the direction is wrong, as far as I could tell. But I don't want to ruin the Yabarba now. But the direction, I believe, is wrong. But as he travels back and passes through Midian, he tells them that they will be unable to defeat Israel, to take them from their spiritual level, otam ki im be'emtzur nashim shehinei tiyena siba l'maflatam. It's only by getting them to sin in this way, because Elohei Yisrael sonezima hu v'midyanim nitretzu b'zeh, and the Midyanim went for this, la'asoto l'kach netakev shem bil'am l'sadera davar l'dat ma'yeh b'hem, and therefore that's the advice he gave them. U'bavur shebal pa'or haya b'gvul mo'av, and because Baal Peor was by the border of Moab, hifkira Midyanim et benoteim l'znut sham im Yisrael. So the daughters of Midian went to sin. Now you all know there's a problem with this. What's the problem? Because it doesn't say the daughters of Midian. It says the daughters of Moab, right? Ki ha-Moavim hishlimu im Yisrael. Lo ha-Midyanim v'chashvu Yisrael b'tchishayu Moaviyot v'shebot l'zvoch l'Baal Peor k'minam gav al-kein amar yichalam l'znot el-benot Moav. That the essentially what he's telling you is that the girls from Midian were dressed up as girls from Moab, and that he fooled them. So as I said, if any of you actually fall for this, then it's great. But I think it's really quite difficult to say this. Ki ada atam shehina yumoviot im hayotam be'emet midyaniot, because they thought they were Moaviot, but they were really Midianiot. So it's one thing if their perception is wrong, but the Torah says that Am Yisrael was sinning with Moav. So are you telling me that God is fooled when he dictates to Moshe? So just realize something, that all the elements that I've pointed out today are so complex that you end up with answers like this. Answers like this is not just that the Bar Benel had a bad day. He didn't have a bad day. The Yabar Benel is troubled by the shift that's taking place. Why are we going to war against Midian? Why not against Moab? What is it that, hold on, Midian is the one that causes Baal with Peor, but wasn't that Moab? And we didn't know what to do with it. Because with Moab, it says the Am is with Moab, and then with Moab, and then it says that they worship their gods. And then it says Vayitzmed Yisrael, and that's the shift between Am to Yisrael, but Baal Peor. And where was that introduced, and how did that happen, and so on. So let's pause again. And we will try to get towards an end over here. And again, I'm going to raise the possibility. So he actually just now said what I was throwing out at you. Again, how you defend this, it's not as hard, because this is a little different now. To say, okay, the Jews did sin with the Moabite girls, but that was just old-fashioned Yetzirah, right? Don't forget about that. That also exists, old-fashioned Yetzirah. And they did it for Yetzirah reasons, but Midian was doing it as far as Midian was concerned, it was weaponized. The women were weaponized, as opposed to Moab. It was just, meaning Moab, it's as it says it. It's znut, sexual sins, morphs into idolatry, because that's how you impress the girl. While on the other hand, the Baal Peor part, which comes in the middle of the narrative, and then this queen or princess coming in for Midian, that he says is based upon a plan, weaponizing the situation in order to get the Jews to sin. And I understand why he's doing this. By the way, at this point, I'm not critical. I'm not. I was critical before when he says they were dressed up as one another. This is a different approach. And at this point, I'm not critical, because that would help explain the distinction between the response. The response to Moab is none. The response to Midian is one which is really extreme. The response actually to Moab is one that Am Yisrael dies. We are wrong for sinning with these girls. We are wrong for the idolatry that follows. But when it comes to this go to war against Midian, there must be something more to it that we're going in. And again, Peor is then going to be identified with Midian and not with Moab. That's part of what's important to all of this. We're going to skip through the Kli Yakar. The Alshech, which is very long, you're going to find that he is troubled by more of the issues that I've raised. He's going to make the distinction between, okay, take a look in the beginning. He says, "Ki ayu shnei sugei avonot, echad yudei benot Moav, echad yudei benot Midian." Now, again, to speak in plural of benot Midian is interesting, because we only saw one, but he's also going to note the difference between Ha'am versus Yisrael. And therefore, the benot Moav ended up bringing down the regular guys, who our expectations are not that great. And he doesn't quite say Erev Rav, but it's like he's leaning in that direction without saying it. But he says that what Midian succeeds in doing, and that is this princess with the prince, that's causing Yisrael to sin. And that's a whole different kind of sin, which means one is a sin of the common uneducated folk, and the other is the sin of the leaders, which he sees as being different. Now again, that was one of the distinctions which he had seen, so at least to realize that he is addressing it, and even though there's lots and lots of things to say, one of the things that he says, again, is the corruption of the tzaddikim. He also says that had Pinchas not stepped in, the entire Jewish people would have been destroyed. And ultimately, he sees over here two different types of nekamot, one a nekama for the physical and the other nekama for the spiritual, which again, is pretty close to what we had already seen earlier. Okay, let us now move over to something which I think we need to pay attention to, and maybe it will help us to resolve some things. Even though Baal Peor is introduced together in the middle of this narrative, and Am Yisrael become connected to Baal Peor, look in source number 13. If you miss this, the reason you missed it is because you fell for the chapter distinctions between chapter, you know, one chapter and the next. Source 13 is all the way back in Parakuf Bet. V'yi babok v'yikach balak et bilam v'yalehu bamot Baal. He takes him to a bama for Baal. So Baal is introduced over here. Now what exactly is Baal? Baal is here without Peor. What is Baal? As the name may indicate, Baal be'ilah, Baal is connected to, again, often understood as connected to a fertility god. So taken to Baal, vayar misham k'tzei ha'am, the reason you could have gotten fooled is if you only started reading the section from the next parak, parak kaf gimel pasuk aleph, which is the next word. Now just realize, where is he building these mizbachot? He's building them by a bamat to Baal. So that itself is theologically breathtaking, what's taking place, which means, just in case you're wondering, is Bilam, Balak, are these monotheists? No, not at all. So again, Balak takes him to this place of Baal. Okay, bring me mizbachot. By the way, when he builds the mizbachot, it doesn't say who he's serving, who he's or worship them to. So they build a mizbeach over there by this place which is connected to Baal. Right, and let's go and see what God has to say to me. Continuation, just skipping a couple verses, source 14, pasuk tet. Ki merosh tsurim erena. Now he is speaking from seeing from the top of the mountain, which for our perspective should be really interesting because the top of the mountain that he has his vantage point from is a mountain connected to Baal. Kimirush tzurim erenu mikvot asherenu, which means, again, talking about the hilltops and the mountaintops should be far more interesting than if we just read this independently. And then he talks about mimana afar Yaakov mispar imro et rova Yisrael, which is really interesting because those are blessings which are actually connected to fertility. So therefore, go back to this idea of a curse turning into blessing, trying to take the fertility god of the locals over here, which could be used to curse the Jewish people to stop the fertility. He's actually taking from the vantage point of this fertility god, turning it around and blessing the people in terms of fertility. But that's really interesting. And the other thing which I just want to say about that, now what happens when the daughters of Moab, who may be connected to this, are going having fertility relations with the Jewish people? I'm just saying is that the sin which is taking place should not be seen by us as completely disconnected to what we've seen so far. Did that make any sense just now? Because everything I just said in the last minute should be absolutely theologically breathtaking. If you followed. If you didn't, then it's okay if I lost you along the way. A little bit after this, we find in source 15, Vayom Balak el Bilam, lechanecha el makom acher. Let me take you to another place, because he may have a better vantage place. Ulai yasher be'enei ha'iluhim v'kabato misham. Maybe God will, you know, play along and curse from there. So now where does he take him that will be able to get a curse? V'yikach Balak et Bilam rosh ha'par. Now just admit this. You may have missed this. Read it. Yes? Do you really feel inadequate now? Because that's the whole point of a rabbi giving a shir, is to make as many people as possible feel inadequate. That we just now had the two of the vantage places which are being used. One is Baal and the other is Pa'ar. And that should be really, really interesting. But again, we then move on to, and what's the blessing over here? In this, that's source 16. V'yisab bilam, and by the way, something else happens over here. And it actually speaks, he builds the bamot and so on and so forth. And did I skip the other thing that it has here? V'yisab bilam etena v'yaret Yisrael shochein l'shavtav v'tihi alav ruach elokim. This time he actually gets prophecy. The other times God uses him as a ventriloquist, really as a dummy, right? He's a dummy that God is holding on to, and then the voice is coming out of him, which, by the way, is probably the best connection between him and Moshe, where we say about Moshe that Shechina medaberet mitoch gunosha Moshe, that God ventriloquizes and Moshe speaks as God uses him, as opposed to other prophets who see a vision and then they say what they see. In this case, he actually seems to get prophecy, which means earlier he doesn't have prophecy, but now he actually has Ruach Elokim, which the Targum will explain as Nivuah. And what does he say now? He sees them Shochen L'Shivtav. He sees this kind of unity, but now Matovu O'alecha Yaakov Mishkanatecha Yisrael. But now he's speaking about the tents, and the question is, what are the tents and what does the Mishkan mean over here? Because the tents and the Mishkan over here may very well mean something which is a bit more spiritual, including the Mishkan. Mishkanotecha is understood by some commentaries as a Beit Tfilah or a Mishkan or the Beit Mikdash and so on, that he actually sees the spirituality. Now, the reason why all of this could help us is one of the things that we noted along the way afterwards when the Jews are guilty of Pa'or is this Midyanit goes in front, and she's taken where? In front of the Ohel Moed. Which means that the worship, and then also the word ma'al was used along the way, which means it seems to be that the pa'or over here, the worship of the pa'or, is trying, again, Balak takes them to this place. One of the things which Chazal tell us, it's the last source that I have over here, in source 21, and I hesitate a little bit, I'll explain to you why. It says the way that they would worship pa'or would be that they would defecate in front of the idol. Now, there's no knowledge of this outside of the Mishnah, which means this is not one of these things that you look in the ancient Near East, you find something, and you always have to suspect a little bit, are we polemicizing or are we making fun of the idols? Because that does happen in the Gemara sometimes. We make fun of how there's a number of times about Avodah Zarah is made fun of, but is this, how literally is this to be taken or not? Or should we conceptualize this as part of Pa'or, the worship of nature? But what's interesting to me over here is, again, just like before, I spoke about Baal as being fertility, and then somehow he's speaking about the Jews becoming numerous. Over here, it's from Pa'or, and then it moves over to the temple worship. And what's interesting is that when Pa'or is introduced, then I didn't know what to do with Zimri and Cosby. Is this part of Pa'or? Is this independent? What leads me to say it is part of Pa'or? The fact that they try to take over the holy places. The fact that it's in front of the Ohel Moed. The fact that something else is taking place. And if, here's a little jump that I'm taking, if Pa'or is connected to the worship of nature, even that you can defecate in front of God, so therefore all bodily functions are therefore by definition, which is holy, it's almost some kind of a pantheism, which we're seeing, and therefore for them to publicly have a display of sex in front of the Ohel Moed really would seem to be trying to undo this vision of Bilam, namely of seeing Matovu Ohalech Yaakov Mishkanotecha Yisrael, but that already becomes part of the Pa'or worship, and that is part of what Cosby does, and that's what she's sent down to do, which means the other girls, whether the girls of Moab are sent or not, it may very well be as we saw. Maybe this is just Yitzhahara with the Am. But on the other hand, Pa'or is introduced. And Pa'or is this ma'al, it's me'ilah. It's taking away that which is holy and desecrating that which is holy and using their worship of, and again, pantheism could be very, very tempting. Once something is natural, we think it's holy, right? We live in that world today, that anything natural is holy. But this idea of having this display, the sexual display in front of the Ohel Moed may be the key when we go look back where Pa'or was actually introduced earlier in the narrative and how the Matovu comes immediately afterwards. Rabbeinu Bachai doesn't say anything that I said, but he does say that Vayar Yisrael Shochein L'Shavtav Miyad Omar Matovu Olecha Yaakov, which means he sees that connection. So if I'm right at everything that I've said, then what I've actually have tried to do is to show why specifically the behavior of Moab is much more Yitzhahara, much more having to do with, yeah, there's idolatry in there, but it's not Pa'or. The Pa'or gets introduced over here, but that's involved in the desecration of that which is holy, and that is something which is, as we see, connected to Midian, even though as we read it, we didn't know it, but that's really why we need more and more information as we move on, and ultimately find out the war against Midian is because the Pa'or does come from then, and that was this attempt in order to destroy that which is holy, but in order to do this, I actually went back, and I didn't see anyone else doing this, going back and looking where Baal was introduced and where Peor was introduced and how those curses turned into blessings, and now how that attempt is to take those blessings and turn them back into curses.